Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Peach State Pandemonium, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we discuss the past, present, and future of professional wrestling in Georgia and beyond. We bring you the latest news and upcoming events, and speak to legends, upcoming stars, and key people in between. Now here's your host, Rich Tate.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Peach State Pandemonium. Glad to be here with you on a Wednesday night. As always, myself and Les Thatcher. Les, how you doing this evening?
The price is Peach State Pandemonium. Come on down, Rich Tate.
You know, I didn't get a chance to see Raw this week.
You didn't?
I always have to miss the first hour because I'm doing that damn sports show. And I usually try to tune in for the second half, but unfortunately I was not able to. How did that go?
Well, you know the truth. Bob Barker, honestly, I think, realized what his role was there better than any of these guest hosts outside of the business themselves have understood. With the exception of the whole stupid thing with Chavo, which he got to karate chop Chavo and Chavo took a bump. I poor Chavo. I don't know what he's done to deserve this. But anyway, you know, Barker had, you know, the game show thing set up at the beginning, and come on down, Santino Marella, for God's sakes, and Jillian Hall, and IRS, Irving Shyster. Thinking, you're playing to 9-year-old kids that wouldn't have a clue who Mike is, but anyway. And then Jericho and Chris came out, and he wasn't happy to be there, and he and Barker had a little exchange, and so anyway, Chris was the closest to the price of a DVD, but I started to say, I'm number one, and Barker said, yep, okay, your bid's one, right? So anyway, and they guys got matches that way. Honestly, Jericho carried MVP to a good match. As, of course, guys like Jericho can do. You know, it was it wasn't the worst Raw of recent memory, but it wasn't the best. You know, it was there. What did it do to push towards the pay per view on Sunday? Gosh, I don't know that it, you know, that it did a lot or it didn't do a lot. Barker spun the wheel, and the Bella Twins found their right niche in the business. They were the Barker beauties, you know, showing the cars and this and that. And Santino was going to win a new Corvette if he could body slam the opponent was picked for him, who was Big Show, and, you know, that sort of nonsense. And, of course, he couldn't. And then Mark Henry came out and slammed Big Show. And but anyway, DX got to spin the wheel and to pick their opponents for the tag match. And, of course, their opponents were Randy Orton and Chris Masters. And you probably had to, you know, you probably were scratching your head and thinking, well, who would DX beat in this situation? Gosh, I don't know. You know, it's just, it was, and then they had Legacy run out and then brawl around the building simply because, you know, they're having a brawl around the building. You know, that's something that's always that's happened in our business. This wasn't initiated as of this past Monday night that I've always been curious about. We give you a taste of what we're going to do at the big house show, at the Coliseum show. This was 30 years ago, 35 years ago, 40 years ago. Or now it's we're going to give you a taste. And it just happens on the show before the pay-per-view or the big Coliseum show. And I'm thinking, are we all just stupid? And why do you do that? You know, why not show some, if you've got a match like that, show highlights of something from 10 years ago or 20 years. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's, again, you know, it's I don't know. I don't know what you call it, but it was, again, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, and it wasn't the best, you know. It was what it was. Honestly, last Thursday night, TNA, wrestling-wise, probably one of the best shows they've had in a while, there was some, you know, poor Victoria has to carry Christy Hemme, who can't slap her ass with both hands.
Yeah, I saw the replay over the weekend. I missed it live.
Hemme gets heat with me just by dancing and prancing and posturing and I mean that's all she's got. I mean that is it. And then of course we had the standardized heel that lost the match gets hit by the heel partner. It's like I think I've seen this 50,000 or 60,000 times on the same show. You know, but hey. You know, if it worked once, why wouldn't it work 4,000 times? I don't know.
Sure.
Two matches that stood out to me, Styles and Saban, Styles and Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Styles and Saban was one of those, wow, that's a neat choreographed thing. Styles and Williams was a wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more of that than we needed the first. You know, and when I say this... AJ and Chris, it was smooth. It was, you know, it was wow. Gee, that's a neat spot. Gee, that's a neat spot. But it's not, I mean, and again, nothing against either one of these guys. They did it well. They're very athletic. It's just, you know, there's no emotional involvement in that. You know, and with Doug Williams, you know, now, here, let me back up a moment and say that neither one of these matches went long enough to get involved one way or the other. But, if you gave both matches time, the Williams-Styles match, if they continued on the same path that they were going, that's the type of thing that you're going to get emotionally involved in, I think, you know?
Right.
And that's what you need. And speaking of that, I as proud as I am of Nigel McGuinness getting the contract and happy for him and Bryan Danielson, it worries me or bothers me, I'm not sure what the exact word is, is what where these guys will you know because these one of the most telling statements about the industry came from the lips of Dean Malenko a number of years ago at my place when I had developmental and Dean had come in with a couple of the agents producers whatever you want to current terminology is. To watch the guys train, and this was after Dean had announced his retirement at the 2001 Pillman, and one of the kids, where everybody's standing around talking, asked him, he said, "Why did you retire?" And Dean quite simply said, "What I do, I can't do in 6 minutes." And what Bryan Danielson does so well, and what Nigel McGuinness does so well, they can't do in 6 minutes either. And
I'm kind of torn on them going. You know, part of it is, hey, great, these guys are going to be able to get a big paycheck for a while, and
right.
You know, possibly become the stars that we know they can be. The question is, will they be allowed to be? And at the same time, I'm concerned for Ring of Honor.
Well, you know, I'm hearing they're struggling a little bit, and I don't hear that from anybody internally. But some people who know some people, so I don't know how much truth there is to it. I intend to go up to Dayton a week from Friday to catch Danielson and Chris Hero. Chris trained at my place a little while when he was a young man. And, of course, he's a Dayton boy. Nigel won't be there, sorry to say. Wow. Those two guys, I make this statement in my column that'll be posted tomorrow. You know, Chris Jericho mentioned a few weeks back what happens when our generation's gone. I said, you know, Nigel and Bryan Danielson are part of the answer to that question. If they're given the opportunity to be, you know, if they don't hit that glass ceiling, if they're utilized, you know.
That was something that we hit on Friday night's Ringside Wrap was, when things first came down that day about Nigel, we were talking about that. Bringing these guys up is, and their style of worker is the key to the future of WWE, because we all know that they've been worried about young talent and who is going to carry the torch over, say, the next into the next decade. And it is guys like Nigel and Bryan Danielson that can do that.
If given the opportunity, yes, I wholeheartedly agree. You know, and I'll tell you what, SmackDown last week, Mysterio and John Morrison. Now, John Morrison could be added to that particular group of names, that because he gets better all the time out. He really does. Of course,
yeah, he is.
You know, it's hard to have a bad match with Ray, just like it's hard to have a bad match with Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Morrison has got the charisma. He's got the package. Now, Nigel, more than Danielson, you know, everybody, I think, gives Danielson the edge in terms of his technical skills over Nigel. But Nigel can do a promo, and Brian's not a strong promo guy or a strong personality.
Right.
But then neither was Benoit. So, you know, take that for, you know, again, it's how you take these guys and build their strengths and stay away from their weaknesses, and hide those. And that's, I think, so critically important as well. But, there's a group of young guys, but, you can have the best quarterback in the history of football, but if you don't use him, if you don't have receivers, if he doesn't have an offensive line to block for him, if you don't give him the plays that play to his strength, then he's not the best, greatest quarterback in the history of the business, you know?
Right.
So go ahead.
I think it's great, too, that Ring of Honor, for their sold-out Glory by Honor 8 event coming up in New York on September 26th, they have announced that Danielson and McGinnis will wrestle each other at that show.
Yeah.
That's a great send-off.
It is. It's sold out, I'm told, too, which is super. And those guys will have a good match. But, you know, here's the thing that bothers me. Why would you bring these guys are two former Ring of Honor world champions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nigel held it a shade longer than Samoa Joe did,
right,
who at the time held it the longest, which is an honor, you know. But it's – and you got to think, why would you bring them in to your company to demean them and hold them down below the standards they're capable of? But that is a possibility in this stupid business that is professional wrestling.
And you know what it's like
the Falcons getting Tom Brady and sitting him on the bench.
Right.
You know?
Well, we got Matt Ryan. We're fine.
Hey, kiss my butt.
But,
well,
you know.
I know. And Matt has got how many Super Bowl rings again?
Well, he's only
okay.
League one.
Moving right along.
But you know, I don't see them killing these guys. I think the feeling inside the company for a while now has been the future of the company, and I think with so much emphasis now with CM Punk, so much with John Morrison, and then you know guys like Danielson and McGinnis, and of course Swagger. I think these are the guys.
You know what?
I'm
sorry. Swagger may be a great amateur, but he needs polish, and he needs somebody to hold his hand. And what I mean by that is somebody to lead him. That's somebody said to me the other day, "Boy, MVP has really gotten good." I said, "What do you mean?" Well, the match he had. I said, "Who was he with Monday night? Who was he with when he elevated himself with Benoit?" But I said, if you realize, and they put him and Swagger together, they've, you know, not openly, I guess, killed that particular little angle or storyline, but they have, and why?
Right.
Because you had, I mean, and again, that's not a knock, Rich, because we all, it's like saying that your two-year-old child can't run the 440, you know, in record time. Well, of course, he can barely walk, for God's sakes. You know, it takes time to learn this business. And some people never learn to lead. That doesn't mean they can't, you know, I won't even go into some names who are already our top guys in both companies who can't lead a lick, you know, but they're top guys because somebody else takes them by the hand and by the way they're promoted, you know.
Right.
So it's not a sin. Everybody's not a leader, but those who aren't have to be led. And somebody has to be wise of that before they start putting programs together, you know.
Well, there you go. All right, let's take a couple minutes, and we're going to go get our special guest on the line.
Well, if you say so.
All
what
right.
am I going to be subjected to now?
You'll see.
Oh, thank you.
We'll be back in a moment.
You'll see the proud American Hacksaw Jim Duggan when he meets up with the deadly Undertaker. Now, he is standing by with Paul Bearer. Then we'll hear from Hacksaw.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan, are you ready? Are you ready to face my Undertaker? Come on down the aisle with your flag waving, with your music playing, and all your little fans standing in their seats. They're going to witness a funeral right in front of them. Your funeral, Jim Duggan.
Duggan, it seems so natural to see you waving that flag. But what you have to see yet is the most unnatural, the most unforgiving, and the unyielding force ever to walk the face of the earth.
Hey, folks, you know, a long, long time ago, up in a small little town in upstate New York, little Jimmy Duggan used to toss and turn before I went to bed because I was afraid. I was afraid of the Wolfman and Frankenstein and all kinds of monsters. But then I kept growing up and up and had many, many experiences. And I realized there's not a man on the face of this earth that I'm afraid of except one. And he lives in Glens Falls, New York, and I call him Dad. So Undertaker, when you step in the ring with me, I've taken you down. And Paul Bearer, stay out of my way, tough guy.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan has made his first New Year's resolution, destroy the Undertaker, and they meet one-on-one at the Oakland Coliseum Arena Friday night, January 3rd. It all starts that evening at 8 p.m. Don't miss your chance to see every exciting moment.
Okay, we're back. I had a little phone problem there. We are going to take another break and try to get him here. Should have him here in just a second. You know, that's how it goes, man. This is live radio.
I know, and I bet it was the same way in 1938 when radio first started.
You got it. All right, be right back.
All right.
And try your call again. For directory assistance information, you may dial 411.
Okay, we're back, and we've got No Jim Duggan. Nigel Sherrod, I know you're listening to us. See what you can do about helping us get him on the line here, if you could, please, sir.
During these break, I was just saying, sitting here thinking, I wish we were on TV, then I could soft shoe. or I don't know any magic tricks. Scott Teal does. I don't know any magic tricks. You know, 30 years ago, with these technical glitches, I would have been pulling my young hair out.
Well, actually, what
and,
it was...
And ready to cut the testicles off my audio, man.
Actually, what it was wrong number. And
really?
I dialed it twice, and it was same person, and she wasn't so happy the second time.
But now as an old man, I've learned that, what the hell?
Yeah.
Who gives a damn?
So we will carry on. We will carry on.
We shall overcome or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. We'll carry on if he can get here on the line. Let me go ahead and let folks know about what we were hoping to plug here with Jim.
Can I plug something here real quick?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. I'm going to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, by golly, the old ECW arena, on October the 8th for CZW, Combat Zone Wrestling. And actually, I don't have the full schedule, which will be posted on the front page of epwt.com and lesthatcher.com as quick as I get it. But we're going to be doing 2 days in Philly at CCW, and then we're going up to Maryland for Maryland Championship Wrestling to do 2 days with them, 8, 9, 10, 11. And that's in October. And if anybody in the area is interested, we'd love to have you. And I'll have the contact information and the schedule up on the site as quick as I get my hands on it.
Very good. All right.
Now, you were going to – I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but, when you get old like this, you got to get things out once.
Get it out there while it's on your mind. Here you go.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, Jim Duggan will be wrestling Rob Adonis in McDonough, Georgia, and he will also be in Fort Valley, Georgia, coming up. Of course, from what I understand, he's also going to be appearing on WMGT 41 in Macon on Friday morning. Not exactly sure what time that is. It's not provided here. But Rampage Pro Wrestling returns to the Spotlight Club in McDonough, Georgia on Thursday. If you're unfamiliar with the Spotlight Club, that is the same location in which Jody Hamilton's Deep South Wrestling ran. So you folks in that area, if you want to get down there and check it out, RPW is one of the hottest new promotions going. Been making quite a build here in the last couple years and doing some really big things based out of Warner Robins, but starting to... spread themselves around Georgia a little bit. Anyway, as aforementioned, Duggan and Adonis will do battle Thursday night. Of course, Tracy Taylor is in action, Chip Day, Simon Sermon. Micah Taylor, Adrian Hawkins will also be there, 7:30 bell time. Tickets are only $10 for adults and $5 for kids. And then on September 11th, I believe that's Friday, right? Yes. Okay, they will be doing Vengeance in the Valley at Fort Valley State University. Apparently that is being, Valley Cable TV is supporting this show. And let's see, it says, see the RPW superstars literally take their opponents to school in the 5,000-seat arena in the new health and physical education complex at Fort Valley. Jim Duggan will make a special appearance inside the ring when he takes on Rob Adonis in a grudge match. Dr. Johnny Gayton will team with Colt Derringer to challenge the RPW Tag Champions Cash Vault. Also in action that night are Murder One, Micah Taylor, J-Rod, Crew Jones, Jimmy Rave, David Young, and Chip Day, Adrian Hawkins. Slaughter Pit will also be there. The Slaughter Pit. And for more information on the RPW organization, you can visit RampageProWrestling.net. And, of course, that is Thursday night. Yes, that is Thursday night and Friday night. So
you know my weird sense of humor. But in recent years, to follow suit with the big promotions, independent promoters they must rack their brain to come up with a name for every damn show they run. You know, that never worried me. I just ran shows. I don't know they ever had a name for any of them. Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
I guess that's why I'm not successful, but I don't know.
Well, hey, Nigel just came through an email here with the correct number. You want to do your soft shoe now? And you can have free reign of the show right now.
I don't know what to do. I'm at a well.
Did you get Gordon Solie's book yet? Because I was going to ask you about that.
Yes, I have gotten Gordon's book, and I'm about halfway through it. And
well, there you go. Share some thoughts on that while I go get
sit and talk on it.
Sure.
Well, I think that it's very interesting, the racing part. You know, so much of Gordon's life in wrestling has been made very public. But the fact that he was so immersed into the racetrack scene in the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater area, and worked with so many top NASCAR drivers before they were top NASCAR drivers, Bobby Allison, Richard Petty, to name a couple, and also drag racing. I don't know who's listening that might be involved, but, of course, Don Garvis lived down near Tampa for years. But Art Malone and a lot of the top drag racers came through there as well. Gordon also worked for many of the radio stations. Bob and Pam and Scott Teal have gone into tremendous detail. I'm curious from reading the book and wondering where they came up with a lot of the detailed information that they had on Gordon. But as we had talked about when Bob and Pam were on with us last week, Gordon was an intricate part of the publicity machine for Championship Wrestling from Florida and Deep South Sports based in Tampa. And what I didn't know is that he did a segment, radio segment. His radio show was picked up from one of the stations there in Cuba. And in doing so, he took a segment of that show and did music related to those people and ended up getting chastised by the station. But anyway, it's a tremendous book. If you don't have it, it would make all the sense in the world to get it and read it.
And of course, if you listened last week, to Bob and Pam Allen, you would know that everybody should have that book, right, Les?
Everybody should have.
Yeah. Everybody should have it. If they don't, they need to get it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's just I'm halfway through it, and so much of some of the stuff where Don Curtis nails the guy from the rodeo announcer.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. Don,
probably
never got in the ring. That part was wrong.
There you go. I tell you what, we got we do have on the line. We do have our guest, so we have rounded up Jim Duggan. So Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, fellas. But you know, the first thing Hacksaw Duggan's got to do is give a big ho. Kind of fires me up, fellas. Come on, Les, give me a ho, buddy. Ho!
How you doing, big Jim?
There we go. How's it going, fellas?
We're doing
very
well.
Good, very good. You know, Rich, the last Hacksaw and I had a chance to hang out in Vegas a few years ago. We did some work out there with Nick Bockwinkel, Georgie Animal Steel, Honky Tonk Man, and you talk about a crew.
Yeah, we had a good time out there in Vegas. I think that was a German company was doing some kind of a wrestling show, going over highlights or something. That was a great time.
Did you ever get to see a finished product of that?
No. I actually think it was a European show, so it showed mostly over in Europe.
I never saw any of it either. I would have liked to because we had a great time doing it. We really did. And Jim tore down the set a couple times.
Well, he started talking about Steve Austin. That gets me fired up now, I'll tell you.
And I tell you what, I saw you get some real cheap heat in Calgary a couple weeks ago when you came out to Bret Hart's music. Boy, you really know how to get over.
Well, I tell you, that whole show with Sergeant Slaughter, and then, of course, we had the singer come out. Everybody thought Cian Dion was coming out or whatever that little girl's name is. But, surprisingly, the WWE just kind of turned the tables on Canada. So it was a lot of fun, of course, to be associated with Raw and still be out there on television.
Hey, Jim. Before we get too far into wrestling stuff, you know, I'm based out of Atlanta, and I had to ask you a question.
Sure.
You, of course, were once signed with the Atlanta Falcons here, and I just got to know exactly when was that, and was that what, 77, 78?
1977. Yeah, it was Lehman Bennett's first year. Steve Barkowski was the quarterback.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I was with the Falcons all that all through 77, and I went up and played with the Argonauts and. 78, and then started wrestling in 79. So I started wrestling late compared to a lot of guys, you know, because I did the 4 years of college and then 2 years pro ball.
Right.
So I started kind of late, but been loving it ever since.
Yeah, you kind of came into the Falcons organization just as they were kind of right on the brink of doing some, having some special seasons at least for a few years, and you know, we all remember Lehman Bennett very well.
Sure, yeah, it was a great time, and I think Jeff Van Noe was a good buddy of mine there, and I think Jeff still does a radio there in Atlanta.
Yeah, he does. He was doing play-by-play. I think he's out of that now with the Falcons, but I believe he's still doing the post-game show. So yeah,
he was a great center. I mean, he wasn't a big guy, he wasn't a strong guy, but he was always in the defender's way. He just had great technique, was a good ball player.
Yeah, Atlanta fans have always argued that him and Tommy Nobis have been basically snubbed by the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's a good point. It really is.
So, Jim, I wanted to, I guess, congratulate you because this is actually your 30th year in professional wrestling.
That's right. It's 30 years in the ring, and it's still great, of course, to still be associated with WWE. And I'm out there wrestling DiBiase's kid, Orton's kid, Dusty's boy. So it's great to get the second-generation guys in the ring and kind of show them some tricks.
Talking about showing the young guys the tricks, where you got your start with Watts, right?
No, I actually broke in with Fritz Von Erich in Dallas.
Oh, did you really? I thought you broke in with Bill.
No, I got my first big break with Bill, but I was in the business quite a while before I got my break with Bill.
So you started with Fritz then?
Yeah, I was a SMU guy. I played my college football for Southern Methodist there in Dallas, and I met Fritz actually on my recruiting trip, and then made the transition to wrestling right down there at the old Sportatorium in Dallas.
That's
and then
right.
I bounced around a lot. I went from there, and I went and worked up for Vince Sr. with the old WWWF. Then I went out to Hawaii. I worked for Peter Maivia, then the Georgia Championship Wrestling. Then I went down to Pensacola with the Fullers, and then out to San Antonio with Tully Blanchard's dad, and then with Bill Watts. So I bounced around a little bit before I got my break with Bill.
But yeah, that was a big run there with him and Dog and Teddy and the whole crew, right?
Well, we would do our TV at the Sportatorium, and we would run Superdome shows. It was a great group of guys. Jake the Snake was down there, Ricky and Robert. Of course, Shawn Michaels came in down there, Dr. Death, Steve Williams. Just a great crew of guys. King Kong, Bundy. I mean, just a who's who of wrestling came through Mid-South, and I think to this day, that's still very popular with wrestling fans.
You know, you mentioned Southern Methodist. That's where Fritz played his football, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's how I met Fritz on a recruiting trip.
Yeah,
and he was an SMU alum, and
instead of getting the cheerleaders with the short skirts that we hear so much about on recruiting trips, you got this big ugly German guy, right?
Yeah. Well, it was a different deal, but it worked out great. I couldn't ask for anything better. I mean, Fritz was a real mentor for me and really set me on the path to where I am today.
Well, Jim, obviously the business has changed a lot since you first got into it. You know, some positive, some negative, I guess. Mostly negative, the fact that you know, there's not enough spots for guys to, I guess, make a living at wrestling these days. But, you know, it's much better for the guys I guess money's better and lifestyle a little bit better. What changes stand out to you, I guess, coming from the late 70s, early 80s territories system to what it is today?
Well, you know, it's great. I'm one of the last of the guys that was around in the old days in the territory deal to see where the WWE has gone today. And, of course, it's changed a lot. You know, back in the old days, it was a much rougher atmosphere. It was very tough. You know, the fans were in the ring with you a lot of times. You were fighting out back to the dressing room. And now, of course, it's sports entertainment. You know, the WWE, we compete against the NFL and the NBA for that entertainment dollar, and it's more than just two guys rolling around in tights anymore. You know, it's the costume, it's the music, it's the fireworks, it's the pageantry. It's a whole show, and it's actually a great show. And like you said, though, it's better for a few guys, but in the old days, a lot of guys have an opportunity to make a living doing that. Now it's just a limited number of guys.
Right. Define your role within WWE. I mean, do they kind of look to you? Do some of the younger guys maybe look to you? You know, I guess to soak up some of the knowledge or your experience or.
Yeah, I think the younger guys now are a lot more professional than we were in the 80s. I mean, there was a lot of partying going on in the 80s and 90s. Everybody was driving 100 miles an hour to the next town, and of course, we were working in a whole lot. A lot more than they do now. You know, the kids seem a lot more professional. They have their laptop computers and their iPods and that kind of stuff, and they just seem a little bit more professional. And it's great to be able to give them a little bit of insight to the history of wrestling. And I think that's one of the reasons Sergeant Slaughter and myself, Jimmy Hart, and Ted DiBiase Sr. are still around, kind of help the younger guys out.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. You mentioned getting to work with a lot of the second generation guys. Who do you see? I guess you know, Les and I talk about it often here. You know, I guess who's going to carry the torch maybe through the next decade of all the younger guys? I mean, which ones do you see that can carry the company? You know, over the next 10, 15 years that are already maybe up there.
Well, I tell you, of course, Cody and Ted Jr., Teddy's boy and Dusty's boy. Those guys, you know, they're second, third generation wrestlers. They're just a little bit more polished than the regular guys. And Dolph Ziggler, I think he's going to be a good hand. I really see that kid doing well as time goes on. And maybe Crime Time, they can come along. But there's definitely a lot of talent. And that's what I tell kids. You know, a lot of kids want to get into professional wrestling and be part of the WWE. You know, I said there's, you know, 1,500 NFL football players playing this year. There's 1,000 NBA basketball players. There's 110 wrestlers under contract for WWE. It's television. It's much more competitive than sports.
Right. As far as we were kind of talking earlier, too, about the fact that Bryan Danielson's on his way up and Nigel McGuinness, of course, have you had a chance to see those guys in action?
Yeah, I sure have. You know, actually, that's part of my role now with WWE. Since this WrestleMania, I'm starting to do more PR and a little bit of scouting for them.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids that we see on these smaller shows, especially the shows coming up this weekend, are all the young stars of tomorrow. They're the kids that are going to be part of the WWE in times to come.
Right. Do you ever hear anybody complaining about the schedule or this, that, and the other these days?
No, the schedule's nothing like it was in the old days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I figured if anybody ever does, you'd have a nice chuckle.
Yeah.
And
well, that's something about wrestling. You know, you can gripe about a flight, say, geez, you know, I just came in from Calgary. It took me 8 hours, and I had a four-hour layover and then a three-hour flight. But then the other guy comes in the dressing room and said, hey, I just came from Tokyo. It's been 22 hours, you know. There's always somebody with a better travel story, so it's hard to complain in the business.
Yeah, and if you've run the Oklahoma territory in a car, then you've done it all.
Oh,
anyway.
Yeah. Back mid-south, we were doing 2,500, 3,000 miles a week driving. It was a lot of driving, but it was a great time. We're all young guys. I mean, the business was very hot. And the boys were a lot closer. We all traveled in the same car, stayed at the same hotels. Now the kids are making so much money, I don't think they're as close as we were in the old days.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, when did the, or I guess whose concept was it, whose idea was it for you to take on the 2x4 as a prop?
Well, actually, Bruiser Brody is the one that kind of, he didn't actually suggest it, but back in the day, he was really helping. I was with Joe Blanchard in Southwest Texas out of San Antonio wrestling,
mm-hmm.
And Brody was telling me, because it was, like I said, a much rougher business. He says, Duggan, he says, if you carry something in the ring, he says, carry something you can use. He said, forget the feathered boas and sequin robes. You know, so he was carrying the chain, so I figured, well, a 2x4 would come in handy because, you know, in the old days, the crowds would keep closing in on the aisle. And I'd storm on down the ring with that 2x4, and they'd kind of part like the Red Sea. So it worked out good, and, it's not a real fancy damn gimmick. It went along well with the American flag, and, of course, you know, that's what I always said. There's nothing fancy about Hacksaw Jim Duggan, just a 2x4 and the flag of the United States of America. Oh, I'm starting to fire up now, guys.
That's one of the things the kids today aren't missing, are they, Jim, is having to fight their way out of the ring.
Well, yeah, and that's probably a good thing. I mean, that wasn't
yeah.
good for the fans. It wasn't good for the atmosphere, you know. And then that's the shows like this weekend. It's a family-friendly show, no obscene gestures, no profanity. The fans can get there early. They can get the pictures and autographs with the wrestlers, get a chance to meet the guys, and it gives a chance for a guy like myself to tell the fans thank you for all the years of support.
Yeah, and of course we mentioned earlier that you are going to be in McDonough here at the Spotlight Club on Thursday, and then of course at Fort Valley State University on Friday. I assume there's meet and greets and all kind of opportunities for fans to get to meet you, I guess probably before the show or sometime during.
Sure, I think doors open an hour early. I think bell time 7:30, so the doors
right.
open at 6:30. And there's, like I said, opportunity to have a meet and greet. And, of course, at intermission there's a photo opportunity. So, like I said, it's a lot different than the WWE. You know, they really keep us isolated from the fans. It's hard to get close to the fans or the fans to get close to us. I mean, a show like this it's a whole lot of fun. It's kind of a throwback to the territory days.
Right.
And, of course, Nigel and Rampage Wrestling are one of the premier independent shows around, so it's great. And of course, the young guy I'm wrestling is one of the guys we're looking at to move up to the WWE.
Oh, really? Cool. One thing I wanted to ask you, just kind of taking a step back, you had mentioned earlier, of course, that you had worked here in Atlanta back in the early 80s.
Sure.
What do you remember from that time? I mean, that was really the first time you had, I guess, really national exposure. But you were really only here maybe a limited time. But what do you remember about the company?
Well, it was a whole new thing. That was, even though I had wrestled in Texas and in New York for Vince Sr. and in Hawaii, Georgia was my first true territory where I was actually making a living wrestling every night. I met one of my best friends of my life, Terry Gordy, who passed away, of course. But it was just a great opportunity. Of course, I was a big Jim Duggan back then. That was way before Hacksaw, even.
Oh, yeah. And if you could, too, just describe the time that you spent in WCW. I mean, obviously, we all know how badly mismanaged the company was, and especially in the latter years. But what was the vibe of the company? Was the writing on the wall?
Yeah, it sure was. Jimmy Hart and I used to joke it was kind of like being on the Titanic. You knew the WCW was going to fold, but you wanted to stick along with the company as long as you could. And it is too bad because it was really a great opportunity for a lot of guys. And WCW and Ted Turner are the ones that started giving guys contracts. Up until that point, nobody had a contract in wrestling. If you worked, you got paid. If you didn't work, you didn't get paid.
But as the Titanic was going down, the bathrooms were clean, right?
Well, I don't know about WCW and that, but it was a great company, and it just shows the mastery of Vince McMahon. I mean, Hulk Hogan, myself, Macho Man, Beefcake, we all went down there, and Sable and Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Stunning Steve Austin went up to the WWE. Vince repackaged them and took on Ted Turner with his whole network and put him out of business. It just shows what a master Vince is.
You know, Jim, I was making a joke about the bathroom thing, but I would like you to, I remember hearing you tell the story about when they came to you with that thing, and the short end of that is that you took it and made the best out of it you possibly could. And I think a lot of kids, that you know, we get some young kids, independent guys that listen to this show, need to hear that story.
Yeah, well, I think, Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo came in down there, and, of course, they were trying to push guys like Tank Abbott and Ernest the Cat Miller, guys that can't get booked on independent shows nowadays, and paying them a buttload of money, and they were trying to push me out of my contract. So they flew me up to Atlanta. We had a big meeting. They're like, Hacksaw, we're going to make you the janitor of the WCW, and you're going to have to clean toilets and stuff. And I said, well, you know, that's fine. You know, just give me my camera time and I'll get it over. So instead of cleaning the toilet with my head back and just kind of barely cleaning the toilet, I get in there, my hair was wet, I was splashing in the toilet, you know, both hands and everything, just getting, and it actually got the character over even more. And I would tell him, I said, you know, do whatever you want with me. You just give me my TV time, I'll get myself over. you know, because Gomer Pyle, he was a private, but still he was the star of the show.
Absolutely. That's a good way to put it.
Yep.
Hey, what do you do when you're off the road? What kind of hobbies you got?
Well, I have two daughters now. My daughter Rebecca is my youngest. She's 15, and she's in basketball. And my daughter Celia is 16, and she's in the volleyball. So I'm very active at home. I just moved from Florida, where we lived for over 20 years, and moved up to South Carolina, where my wife's family's from. And I got a little hobby farm, I guess you would call it.
Is the wife into real estate now again, Jim, up there?
No, not too much. Now she's a substitute teacher with the schools, and she's hands-on with the kids. And
oh, good.
Of course, I still do quite a bit with the WWE, and then on the odd weekend when I can, I get out and look at the talent and do some independent shows.
Very good. Well, Jim, we definitely appreciate you coming on with us tonight, and hope to have you on again somewhere down the road.
Well, my pleasure, fellas. I mean, you guys, the number, of course, it's good to talk to Les again. Like you said, I hadn't seen
Jim,
him.
Jim, always a pleasure, my friend. Listen,
I don't
give the wife my best.
Cauliflower Alley this year, Les?
You know what? I hope to get out there for the next. I didn't go this past one, but I hope to get out for the next one.
Yeah, that was my first year. The Cauliflower Alley Club is an old-time wrestling organization. They have a convention out in Vegas, and Sergeant Slaughter and myself went representing the WWE this year, and it was a great opportunity to see guys like Reggie Parks and people like that that, didn't ever go up to the WWE but were great wrestlers and great history in wrestling.
You know what you would enjoy, too, and living in South Carolina, it wouldn't be that bad a trip, is Mobile the first weekend in March for the reunion down there.
I heard about that, yeah. Actually, I did the NWA Legends Convention up here in Charlotte. And everybody was talking about the Mobile deal, where it's a great opportunity
to
build friendships.
Yeah, we make that every year for sure. And yeah, you ought to make it, man. You'd enjoy it. You really would. Bring the wife in. It's family. I mean, it's just a lot of fun. Everything's home cooked in the at the building, and it's just a great weekend. It really is.
I think that's one thing the fans don't realize. I mean, there's only even in the. And the whole family of professional wrestlers, there's actually very few of us, and we all seem to know each other, and even though we're all scattered around the world, it's always good together and get to see some old friends.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, again, I want to remind everybody that Jim will be with Rampage Wrestling on Thursday in McDonough and Friday in Fort Valley. You can always get your information at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the more details on those shows. Jim, it's been a pleasure, and best of luck to you this weekend, and just have a great time. I'm sure the Georgia fans are going to love it.
Well, like I said, it's a great family night out. I know a lot of folks are critical of professional wrestling. I tell those folks, I said, usually they're the ones that have never been to the show. Come to a wrestling match with an open mind. 99% of the time you're going to go home having a great time. I mean, it's like I said, it's just not two guys rolling around anymore. It's a whole show. And it's a great family night out.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, take care, man.
Okay, thanks.
God bless you.
You know, I got to finish up with this one.
Ho, ho, USA! USA! I'll see you in Georgia, tough guy.
All right.
All right, take care, Jim.
Thanks.
Be good.
Thanks, Jim.
Oh, I love it.
He's a terrific guy. He and I got a chance to hang out in Vegas, we went out to Scott Casey's school one evening, and it's just he's a ball. He really is. We had that whole crew. If you can imagine, $50 word Bockwinkle with Honky Tonk, George Steele, Jim, and myself, and it was. But we were out there two different times, 2 days each time, and we just had a blast. I wish I could. What we did is we did like a round table. Talking over old matches, right? It was like when they were young type of thing, right?
Right.
And then we did like an infomercial and some spots and, some funny stuff, too. I was the moderator, basically. But like in one segment, we had Bockwinkle paint his tongue green like George Steele would do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And George used the $50 words. So, I mean, so we played a little bit and cut up a little bit, too, on camera. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, Jim's a great guy. He really is.
Very good. And also, I left this out, and I did not mean to, but Rampage Pro Wrestling, you can actually also see them at their headquarters in Warner Robins, which takes place at Johnny G's Fun Center on Russell Parkway. They are there every other Sunday. So you can always check them out on Sunday afternoons, and don't forget the special shows in McDonough Thursday and Fort Valley on Friday. You know, I found it interesting that he said while he was on the air with us that they were actually scouting the guy he's wrestling, and of course that's Rob Adonis. Rob's a good guy, and I'm not sure if I've seen him work or not. Yeah, if that was a shoot, hey, congrats, Rob. Hope things work out for you, because you know, Lord knows the future of WWE is suspect.
Never pack your bags though till the ink's dry on the contract.
there you go.
You know that's true. So I mean, you know, and when I say that, I don't mean any disrespect about it, but I mean you got to realize when you go out you look at everybody, right? I mean, with a critical eye and you know, you know, when I was under contract, well, and I still do. You know, and if I see somebody that I think is worthwhile, I'll call somebody. You know, I'll call Tommy Pritchard down in Florida and say, hey, here's a kid that maybe you guys should take a look at, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, that's something I've always told my kids, you know. Always be prepared. Be in shape. Be the best worker you can be. Be professional. Because when opportunity knocks, if you're not ready to go through the door, then you may never get the chance. You know,
well,
it's not like when somebody says, "Hey, kid, your work's good, but you're 75 pounds overweight." Well, I'll get in shape. Maybe too late.
Yeah, you know? Well, you know, the thing is too, you never know who's sitting in that crowd. So
that's right.
Make every match count. There may be three people in the audience. One of them might be somebody that's watching you for something big. So, you know, don't ever discount the crowd.
You don't know. It's always be your best. You know, mm-hmm. give what you got. That's, you know, and I think that's the mark of professional too, Rich. You know, there were times that we worked, you know, when I tell you I've worked in front of 15,000 people, I have. But I worked in front of 15 people or 50 people. We all have. You know, because there are times that that there's a, you know, a spot show that for whatever reason wasn't advertised properly or doesn't draw for one reason or another, and you know you can look out the dressing room door and think, oh my God, there's nobody out there, wow. But you know, if you have pride in yourself as a professional, once you step out there, I don't care. Those people paid the same price,
mm-hmm.
and John Ringley, I remember hearing him tell a young kid years ago, and I'll never forget it. I'd never thought of it in these terms, but John told this young kid, you know, we can all go out and work hard in front of a sellout, but it makes more sense to work harder in front of a small house because that means they'll go home and tell somebody, and maybe you'll build that house up.
You got it.
You know, so that's... And, you know, with the independents, I think we've talked about this before, but that's without television, without that big media machine, man, you've got to
impress. Live shows, all you got.
Yeah, you've got to impress the people in the seats, not impress yourself. Impress the people in the seats to go home and say, man, you missed something, you know?
Yep.
And that's the key with these young guys is, never mind what you're – listen to those people. When I say listen to them, I don't mean let them dictate to you and tell you how to work your match. But make sure they are into the match because that's – you know, guys say, well, would you watch my tape? Yeah, I'll watch your tape. But also listen to it because if no matter how good you think it is, if the audience is not responding, then it ain't worth a damn.
Right.
You know, it means nothing. Because that's the people you're working for, not me, not yourself, but for those people there that have bought the tickets. And they're the ones that's got to go back and say, man, you should have been with me last night at so-and-so's show. Man, it was really good. Because there's word of mouth, and I don't care, even if it's WWE or TNA, word of mouth can be your best or your worst advertisement. Because,
right.
You know, it's like if your next-door neighbor said, Rich, you don't want to deal with that plumber down, you know, so-and-so, you probably won't.
You got it. Hey, you know you're talking about indies and television and not having television. We've been talking about Rampage. I just want to mention that we got a story through Larry Goodman a couple days ago, posted it at the website. Rampage Pro Wrestling did a 1.0 in the Macon Nielsen ratings for June, placing third among all TV wrestling shows behind Raw and TNA, and ahead of SmackDown, ECW, Superstars, and AWA Classics. Now, this is for a show that airs at 8:30 a.m. on a Saturday. That's not bad to be beating SmackDown, ECW,
well, you know,
Superstars, which are in prime time.
I'm going to tell you something. When Jimmy Cornette and Danny Davis had Ohio Valley, and they were on, I don't remember if it was Fox or whatever, one of the network stations there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got in unintentional heat with the big company because they were drawing better numbers, but Jimmy was booking and telling better stories. Now, and that's something that these independents, you can say I'm old, you can say whatever you want, but the facts of life are this. I can, and you've heard me say this 100 times, I can see what WWE does in the comfort of my living room for free every Monday and every Friday night. Costs me nothing. They've got million-dollar productions. You independents don't have you don't have $1,000 productions for the most part, for God's sakes. What do you have to offer? Good, solid in-ring work. Forget the cartoons. Forget all that. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the music and the costs, but concentrate, once that bell rings, on being a solid performer in that ring, because that's something that it's hard to get in the big companies right now, and it really is.
You got it. Now, you were switching subjects. You were talking earlier, of course, you were sharing your thoughts about the Gordon Solie book. I just wanted to make mention that this Drawing Heat book from Larry Matisic, and I'm sure I'm screwing up his name, and all apologies.
No, Matisic.
Okay. I was kind of skeptical, not knowing what I was getting into with this book, but I got to say, I'm probably a third to halfway in. It's good stuff. This is really good stuff.
I've heard about it, and I'm sure, well, you know, Larry.
He's got
Larry,
a great take on
Larry was educated to the business by Sam Muchnick's office.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody was serious about professional wrestling, it was St. Louis office.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was high quality professionalism at any level. I remember getting a chance to go when I first did television at the old Chase, at the Chase Ballroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a young man, went down there to do TV. The amazing chandeliers, chrome stanchions with velvet, you know, retaining ropes, people in tuxedos and evening gowns sitting at tables being served cocktails, and we were wrestling in front of these people. But wrestling had such an image in St. Louis. This was back in the early 60s. Wrestling had such an image in St. Louis at that time. Sam saw to it that they did. And that's where Larry's education came from, that people would come to the wrestling taping before they went to the opera, before they went to a stage, or to some big social function.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, dignitaries, city officials were noted to come to the St. Louis shows, you know. But here's the other, you know, it's not about, you are what you make people perceive. If you're low rent, badly managed, unprofessional, then that's, expect people to look at you like that,
right?
You know. And it's not about how much money. It's about putting on a solid show that starts on time, that is tight. Everybody doesn't get the microphone to babble for 15 minutes because they have nothing to say. You know, you let the people that can talk, talk. The ones that can't, don't. The guys who actually know how to work have long matches, and the guys who don't, you cut them short. Again, you know, you play to your strengths and hide your weaknesses as best you can. And I don't care what level. That's whether it's the Atlanta Falcons or ABC independent wrestling, you know.
There you go.
It works the same everywhere.
Well, we've been plugging stuff all night long. I want to mention that tomorrow night's nosebleed section, kind of a...
Do we have to mention them guys? I don't.
They will be reviewing the new Rise and Fall of WCW DVD and, of course, tackling some the latest odd wrestling news and, of course, digging into the listener mailbag. And, of course, Les, I'm not sure if you're aware, but last week there was an explosion in the studio at the headquarters of the Nosebleed section, and sadly, the wrestling granny Evelyn Dix passed away.
Thank God.
So they will be having a... Yeah. They will be having a memorial to her tomorrow night.
You mean my body is safe then?
Yeah.
Right. I won't be molested or anything. All right.
So that's what's happening tomorrow night on the DWA
Radio. Can we bury Santino's character along with not him? For I mean him no harm, but that character, can we bury him with Granny too?
I hope so, and if we can do that, I hope we can bury the whole burying Chavo thing.
Oh, poor Chavo. Yeah, let's stop burying Chavo. My God. You know, and the sad thing, he and Matt Sydal, or excuse me, Evan Bourne, you know, leave them alone and let them have a decent... Chavo is a solid performer. He really is. And, again, when I say that, do I think they should push him to headline the next pay-per-view or any pay-per-view? Not necessarily. But Chavo can go out there and have a good match with anybody and get over. But all you're doing is ruining somebody that's of value to you, somebody that can actually work, that actually knows how to work, can actually go out there and carry one of your younger guys. If Chavo looks good, then when he gets the other kid over, the kid looks good. But now you've got a guy who has put over a little person. I'm not allowed to say midget anymore. A little person 15 weeks in a row or something. So you beat him, I beat him, his mother beat him. Who cares? You know, it means nothing. You kill off the golden goose in so many ways, and it's really sad. It really is. You know, while we're on politics and wrestling, were we on politics? What do you think of the deal with Angelina Love?
Is that not a crazy story?
Well, you know,
apparently
she'd been
working in the country on a visa that had expired a couple of years ago.
Well, I guess it never. You know, but I don't understand and. I don't know who handles that stuff with TNA, but
first and foremost, we talked about
Nigel earlier. Nigel, now I didn't have a big staff, right? I mean, my staff was me and a couple other guys that helped me part time. But you know, do you have a visa? You know, we would put them in touch with people. We didn't handle that stuff because, you know, we just weren't equipped for that.
Well, that was what I was going to say.
That's their job.
TNA should have known, but I would say it's Angelina's job basically to keep that thing up to date, right? I mean, she,
well,
it,
I, would think, I would think, you know, now, I'll tell you the truth, if I'm going to Japan or Canada or wherever that you need a visa to, you know, working permit, and I'm going there to spend some time, then I'm going to see to it that, you know, I'm not going to be escorted out of the country or go to jail. It's a shame because the position she was in, and it's like, boom, you know, it's all over. Yeah, I don't know where the fault lies there, probably on both sides of the fence, honestly.
What I'm hearing too is that if from Mike Aldrin, if investigations ensue, she could be banned from entering the U.S. for 10 years and forced to pay back any salary she has earned while working without a visa.
I would be venture to say she won't have that money available to write a check on for the last 2 years. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I mean, even if she was frugal, and you know, she's certainly still not going to have 100% of what she had. And then you got to wonder about taxes, and I mean, it just opens up a floodgate of questions, you know.
Right.
But still, you know, see, to me, the company, when you're signing somebody to a contract, Tracy Brooks and I talked about this. She had sent pictures to me at one point when I had my school here, and she had plans to come here, but she could not get a visa. She, you know, because she obviously needed to work, right, to come here and train.
Mm-hmm. And so it never flew. It never happened. And so, you know, but again, it's just, wow, you know.
Well, here's the thing, too. According to the reports, her visa had expired in between WWE and TNA.
Well, I would so, now see, and I don't know this to be a fact, but if I'm an alien, illegal or otherwise, and I'm working for you, and then I go work for somebody else, I would think that's the government has to know, you know, the people who handle the visas, immigration, and so forth. That's all got to be documented. I'm no expert at this, but I'm thinking if I'm in TNA's office. And you've been working for WWE, and you're coming to work for us, and you're going to sign a contract to work for us, and we're working out a deal, then the first thing I'm going to ask you is if you are Mexican, Japanese, Siberian, or Canadian, are your papers in order? And let's check and you know, in other words, cross all your T's and dot all your I's, you know?
Yeah, because TNA could be on the hook for a lot of stuff here, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. It's a shame, you know. I mean, it really is. It really is.
Hey, I wanted to ask you. Obviously, Trish Stratus is speaking of Canada. Going to be the guest host for next week's Raw. Batista, from what I understand, is going to make a career altering announcement. What's he going to break for us?
Is he going to? I don't know. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. Somebody made a joke and said he'll walk down the ramp, trip and fall, and hurt himself again. I don't know. I really don't. Dave has come a long way. He honestly has. A lot of people say, well, you know, he's not. He's man. If you don't think he's good now, you should see him when he first started in OVW. Now he doesn't give OVW a lot of credit, but that's wrong. They used him at the best of his ability at that point in time. And there was a time when I was with that company that I wasn't real sure how long his time was left with that company because they were afraid nerves that he hadn't picked up, learned fast enough or whatever. I don't, you know, and again, this is just conversations that I'd heard. I'm thinking, but I always found him to be a real nice guy. And, you know, very cooperative. He came up and trained with us some. And, you know, and I worked with him around OVW and everything. And, he's come a long way. He really has come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a great look. He really does.
That he does.
And I'll tell you something. He, personality-wise, when he comes out and does promos and stuff now, that was something. I can't say that he wasn't capable of that, you know, 10 years ago. But it wasn't he was bashful enough that he hid it, you know.
Yeah.
That it he didn't project that, and so he's opened up quite a bit. He really has.
Have you heard that Sid Vicious's 16-year-old son's wrestling now?
I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to ask who trained him.
Apparently, wrestling is Lord Humongous, and coming up on September 19th in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Okay.
He is going to team with Scott Hall against his dad and someone called Poker Face.
Okay. Whatever you say. Here's my problem. Why would you announce that your son is going to wrestle against you as somebody else? I mean, that makes no sense to me. You know, it really doesn't. You know,
hey, you're right.
Rich Tate and his wife are going to take on their daughters under the mask. Okay, well now that kind of took the edge off of anything I'm watching here. You know, I'm supposed to believe Rich Tate's going to beat the hell out of his kids? Okay. And the moon is made of blue cheese, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, it's just again, if you're going to suspend disbelief, you got to work at it.
It's an art form, and unfortunately too many people, I don't think, not only understand the business and what it's supposed to be, but how to perform that art.
You're right. I agree with you 100%, my friend. I really do.
All
well,
right.
It's there's too many amateurs with their fingers in the pot trying to be cooks, and it doesn't work all the time. sadly enough, there's that you know, that's one of the big obstacles for guys who honestly have a passion, who honestly will work their butts off and want to succeed and make it in this business and really want to learn the art form. There's so many obstacles that don't even realize they are obstacles, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just guys who are playing at it and who are never going anyplace and don't care.
Yep.
Sad, you know, and again, I don't hate those people. I'm sure they love their mothers and all that, but it's just bad for the business as a whole.
Hey, before we get out of here, you want to tell our listeners who our guest is next week?
Our guest next week is Harley Race.
Yeah, the one and only.
Seven-time world champion and a hell of a guy. And this starting the 28th through the 2nd, through 28th September through October 2nd is the annual Harley Race Pro Wrestling NOAH training camp. And they're finishing up with a big show in Eldon. Harley's got a new school there, which I haven't seen yet. A bigger, newer place. But they've got, this is like 10th anniversary. Bret Hart's going to be there. Steamboat's going to be there. Terry Funk, Roger Kirby, Tom Andrews, and a cast of thousands. And I'm sure some of the NOAH guys, because they're all, there's always a couple, you know, two or three or four, or whatever, however many of the NOAH wrestlers that are there, too. If you are a serious independent wrestler, and I'm sure that thing is sold out already because there's limited availability, it's worth your time and effort to go there because you're going to get looked at by the NOAH people, by some, will be Steamboat probably this year from WWE, it's plus you get a chance to work with Harley. It's well worth your time.
Vordell Walker, one of the extremely talented Georgia-based wrestlers, made the trip last year, and Harley about wore him out. But I got to tell you, ever since he attended the camp, any matches that I've seen since then, I can see definite improvement. And that's not a knock on him. He was already extremely talented before he went to that camp. He just basically he took everything he could get from Harley and all the trainers there, and he has literally taken steps. And
you know, that's one of the things that we miss with the territories, Rich. I was talking to one of the guys from my era the other day, and he said, you know, we had 28 or however many territories there were at the time, you know. We had that many colleges, and every time we changed a territory, we went to a new college and learned from new teachers, and that's not out there. That's not available to you. So, yes, and I'm going to, you know, call it ego, call it whatever you want. You get a chance to work at Harley Race, Ricky Steamboat, Les Thatcher, Tommy Pritchard, Terry Taylor, guys, and then there's more. I mean, those are the ones. Bill DeMont has just opened a school somewhere in the Atlanta area, has he not?
I've heard that. I don't know.
I believe he has. But anyway, you get to learn from when you get. You know, I don't. If some guy that's been in the business 15 minutes or 15 days or 3 years is teaching you, and he can teach you what he knows. He cannot teach you what he's never done. And the guys I just mentioned have been there, done that at every level, and they can teach you. And believe me. You can, you know, you're going to, if you shut up and listen, you're going to step up. You really are, and it's well worth your time.
Well, Les, you got anything else?
No, I didn't win the lottery, so we've got to do this again next week, right? I can't buy you any new equipment, so I don't have to listen to damn commercials anymore.
Well, hey, we played a promo tonight.
I know. That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
All right. Yeah, I think that's the way we're leaning.
But we got Harley next week, right? And we'll talk about the camp and all the good stuff, too.
Absolutely. A lot of good stories, I'm sure, too. So be sure to join us next Wednesday night here again. And don't forget tomorrow night, the memorial for the wrestling granny Evelyn Dix on the nosebleed section. Les and I will be back here next Wednesday, 9 o'clock. See ya.
See you then.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Be sure to stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for information on upcoming shows, as well as all the news and information you could ever need and want. As always, GWH thanks you for your continued support.